And welcome to Open Sources Guelph here on CFRU 93.3 FM, Guelph Campus and Community Radio. I'm Adam A. Donaldson of Guelph Politico, and oh, my luggage. My luggage.
It's definitely luggage land here this weekend. Scotty Hertz here. And I've also signed up again. I'm a student again. It's really weird after all these years. So I guess I'm here in capacity as both staff and a student. And just a guy who knows exactly where his luggage is at all times.
There you go.
Like my wallet. So.
Open Source is a CFRU's political and current affairs discussion show, and you can listen to us live here on CFRU every Thursday at 5 p.m. You can also listen to us live online. Just go to cfru.ca and click on the Listen Now icon at the top right-hand corner of your screen. And you can listen to us anytime by downloading the Open Sources podcast from Podbean on the Guelph Politicast channel or subscribe through iTunes. Today, we will look at last week's by-election in the provincial riding of Scarborough Rouge River and whether or not this is the first step in forming a government for PC leader Patrick Brown. And we'll also look at whether or not a letter that Brown did or did not send saying that he would cancel the new sex ed curriculum if elected in 2018 will mean long-term pain or short-term gain. Then we will look at another snafu in electoral communiques as federal conservative leadership candidate Kelly Leach is trying to explain herself, and a question about whether or not we should be testing immigrants for Canadian values. Is that a smart move for the woman trying to live down barbaric cultural practices and a party trying to embrace more diversity? We'll look at that. And then finally, we will salute or roast, as the case may be, Peter Mansbridge, who announced his retirement from the National this week. He's CBC's million-dollar man, and while we take one Mansbridge over a fleet of wolf blitzers, the idea of the celebrity anchor, is that now passé? And if not, who might replace Mansbridge behind the National's desk? But first, it is week 3087 of the U.S. presidential election. Sadly, the Trump campaign has not shown, or I should say, sadly, the Trump campaign has shown some signs of life. There are new polls out that indicate that he is nationally leading Hillary Clinton, although there is a statistical margin of error there. As well, there was a national security town hall last night where both Hillary Clinton and Donald Trump participated. Not great is the word being tossed around for that, not just for some of the things Trump was saying, like bringing back imperialism, pretty
he
much a policy.
He said that.
Well, he didn't put it. I don't think he put it in those words.
But
basically he said, I don't have the exact words in front of me, but it was to the effect of, we're going to take the oil, we're going to beat ISIS, leave some troops in Iraq, take the oil. And that's all there is to it.
Subjugate all the peoples. And he doesn't know what subjugate means, probably.
And then
extreme
that
subjugation. I don't know.
Oh, jeez.
Maybe.
That might be next.
Wouldn't put it past him.
Yeah, and I mean, this is after things have calmed down since we last talked about this. Like, the last time we talked about this 2 weeks ago, this was blowing up in his face in every conceivable measure of the imagination. But things have calmed down considerably. It seems like whatever zaniness was going on behind the scenes seems to have chilled out to the point where nothing crazy is happening on an hourly basis. However, I want to talk about something that seems to be, you know, missing from the media, or at least the TV media coverage of what's going on. And that is, you know, a couple of weeks ago, he was accusing Hillary Clinton of pay for play at the State Department and the Clinton Foundation. Turns out Donald Trump is doing some pay for play of his own with the Florida Attorney General and Pam Bondi, who was looking at coming aboard the Trump University lawsuit. She personally asked for a donation to her campaign from Donald Trump. And of course, it's not so terribly out of the ordinary. Florida is one of his homes, and it's one of the places where he has a major resort, the Mar-a-Lago resort. But still, mysteriously, a couple of days after Donald Trump sends her a check, nope, Florida doesn't join the Trump University class action lawsuit. How mysterious. How many shows was this mentioned on last Sunday in the terms of the Sunday talk shows on US TV? One.
Oh, which one was that?
It was Face the Nation. It was
of course,
John Dickerson. Yeah.
She's a good woman. That's what he would say probably. I don't know if he said anything at all. Yeah, I think it's possible that Trump is listening to the handlers a bit now and sort of playing it a little bit cool. But of course, what was it he said when they were? You only get bits and pieces of foreign policy. He was like, I'm not going to broadcast my policy to the enemy.
Yeah,
I think that CNN called this the policy-free election. They just spend so much time beating on each other that there really isn't any massive policy announcements. You heard a little bit from Hillary Clinton usually at a rally of some kind, and she doesn't, you know, that's not really the stuff that makes the grade. It's everything else. It's all the, you know, tit for tat stuff with each other. And it's interesting you mentioned those polls, because it does seem, at least in the popular vote, whatever, that Trump is gaining. There's still a bit of a margin between the two of them, like 3.5%, something like that. But the amount that seemed to be going third party is fairly significant, something in the range of 12%.
Yes.
So I guess that's in all likelihood being divided between the Libertarian, Gary Johnson, and probably Jill Stein of the Greens.
Well, yeah, he's carrying most of it.
He's carrying most of it.
It'll be interesting to see what happens with Gary Johnson, because he was on some show this morning and they asked him about Aleppo and he's like, "What's Aleppo?"
No, really?
Yeah.
I missed that completely. I was at work.
Yeah. No, he
what
didn't.
Is Aleppo?
What is Aleppo?
It sounds like a Jeopardy answer. What is Aleppo?
Well, somebody made that joke.
Did they know?
It's funny you should mention that about CNN, though, because CNN has to be at least 2/3 of the problem with election coverage.
Yeah, probably.
but 'cause,
sorry, CNN, it's true, though. Yeah.
I mean, you know, we'll talk about CBC later, but, you know, you watch the Ad Issue panel on The National. It is like, I don't know what it's like as compared to some of those CNN panels where they have the Trump supporters on. And it's like they live in an imaginary world of unicorns and pancakes that talk, and none of it matters, not facts, not reality, anything. And they have, of course, they have Corey Lewandowski on there who, and I've been following this kind of carefully because this is like sort of media stuff. He is still getting paid by the Trump campaign, or at least his company is being paid by the Trump campaign. He's still doing work with Donald Trump. There's reports that he's doing debate prep with Donald Trump. So here you have a national news organization paying someone to be a commentator on an election where he is being paid by one of the candidates. And if you believe, and I do, he has signed an NDA, a legally binding agreement, not to say anything negative about that person. So this is like disgusting conflict of interest all over the place.
Super partisan, yeah.
Yeah, and Media Matters actually has a petition that's like, demand CNN pull Corey Lewandowski. And you talk to Jeff Zucker, who's the head of CNN, the president of CNN, and he's like, "Oh, well, it's so hard to find Donald Trump supporters and to want to talk on the air." And it's like,
who can talk on the air, I think, is probably.
How about not having Donald Trump supporters on the air? And I mean that as well as, like, not, let's not have Hillary Clinton supporters on the air. Let's do, like, nice, independent, fact-based analysis, and then maybe we'll get to the bottom of some of this stuff here rather than just talking about the clobbering time stuff.
And I think that's the difference here is that they get what I consider to be actual journalists. And there is a little bit, so, you know, depending on their politics, sometimes you can tell, but it's a little bit different approach. And then, of course, up here we have the insiders, which are people that are on the inside track, but they're a bit more gracious, I think. Like, we could talk about, you know, the difference between Canada and U.S. coverage all day. I mean, of course, even the Canadian coverage of the election, it's always we sort of take a step back. But there are, you know, CBC and others have lots of people embedded down there. Not embedded, but following the campaigns, at least.
Mm-hmm.
So we get a little bit different spin on it. But yeah, and spin's pretty much what it's all about. But yeah, so it's one of they call this the home stretch now. Like, after Labor Day is when it really kicks into gear. But like you say, it's been a kabillion years. I read that Ted Cruz announced in March of 2015. Mm-hmm. So by the time we have Election Day in November, it'll have been 600 days. 600 days since Ted Cruz said, "I want to be president." That's how long this has been going on. And of course, we've been talking about it as well, of course, because we have to. It's the big election. But so that's why it feels like it's been going on for a long, long time. So is this the home stretch? It definitely is. I mean, there's still a couple of months left and a lot can happen. But I don't know. We're still sort of getting dribs and drabs, right? there's no, I guess it hasn't kicked into full gear yet, but I'd heard on the weekend that Hillary Clinton has scored a bunch of fundraising. There's something where they go to like the vacation areas where the rich play,
yeah,
and raise a bunch of money. In terms of fundraising, Hillary's got it covered, and also I guess both of them have a certain number of billionaires on their side. But it sounds like Hillary has the known billionaires on her side, like Bloomberg. And is Oprah a billionaire? If she isn't, she's probably close, right?
Yeah, good question.
I would group her with the moneyed people whose names people know. And George Soros. So in terms of back, you know, they have their backers, but I think in terms of the establishment backers, if you want to call them that, Hillary's got it wrapped up. Warren Buffett, another one.
Yeah, he's a good one.
And it sounds like the Koch brothers have gone into neutral in this. They normally just sort of solidly back the Republican and throw money at them. It sounds like that's not what's happening this time. So, and I think some of that speaks to, you hear about it a lot, the popularity of the candidates. And the weird poll that I saw was people seem to trust Trump more than Clinton, which I thought was odd.
Yeah.
But I guess all Trump does is she's not trustworthy. You can't trust her. You know, that's the kind of stuff he says all the time. Maybe that's having some effect. Maybe it's the Benghazi effect or the email server, which I think came up at the discussion. She got a question or two about the emails.
Matt Lauer spent like a quarter of the time talking about the emails. And it wasn't so even supposed to be about that. It was about foreign policy.
That's what
and
I thought too.
Security.
I was like, I guess technically it might be. But so it keeps coming out. And maybe that's why her trustworthy numbers, I think something as low as like 37.
Yeah.
Compared to 40 something for Trump. But I think this is the problem, is that both of them seem to be disliked to a degree. I mean, and that's probably even among people that are going to vote for them who have rock solid Democrats or Republicans.
Yeah, and it's first of all, Oprah's worth $3 billion.
Whoa.
Yeah, she's the
fifth. I knew it was high. I didn't realize
she's the fifth richest self-made woman in America, according to Forbes.
I would say possibly in the world.
I just googled how rich is Oprah, and I got that.
she's up there.
The one thing that kind of gives me hope about the situation in Hillary Clinton's chances is that we keep hearing about the tit for tat stuff, which, you know, Trump gets up and says this, Hillary gets up and says that. But what's going to make the difference, I think, I hope, is the ground game. And when you see articles, I can't remember where I read that last weekend, but there was an article about Donald Trump basically having one campaign office in Florida versus Hillary, who has over 100.
Mm-hmm. One
that's, yeah.
That's
one office.
Say that's unnerving, but you can't win an election with that.
Yeah, and you know, having the campaign offices is about more than just, you know, here in Canada, we know about campaign offices. All the candidates have, or at least the major candidates who have money and a budget, get a campaign office. It's the same thing in the States, except it's not individual candidates. It's the one candidate running for president has campaign offices. And what does the campaign office do? It organizes volunteers. It, makes phone calls to get people's support, to rally, to do events, to, you know, then come election day, driving people to the polls, telling people, hey, remember to get out to the poll today. Florida is the biggest non-committed state or swing state up for bids in this election. And if you have one campaign office 2 months out from E-Day, it says that, you know, you're really not organized well to make sure people get to the polls. Now, I mean, maybe there's just so much press, maybe about the election, maybe the Trump campaign is taking it for granted. But when you start looking state by state, there was an article yesterday that says Arizona is basically neck and neck for Trump Clinton. Arizona, reddest of the red states, theoretically someplace Trump should be kicking butt in because of his primary issue, immigration, which we haven't talked about, which it still isn't entirely clear where he stands and on what. But considering some of the stuff that's happened in Arizona around the immigration issue, you'd think Trump would be their guy. But no, Trump and Clinton are neck and neck. And that's not the only state where that's going on. And not the only red state point out, Georgia is also neck and neck. And you know what wins these presidential elections? It's state by state.
Mm-hmm.
It's collecting the Electoral College delegates.
That's right. And as far as the numbers are now, Hillary Clinton has the Electoral College wrapped up.
Yeah.
It would seem. And Trump has to win the swing states, like all of them, or he cannot statistically win the presidency. So that's obviously where the decision is going to be made. This could be one of those years where the popular vote in the Electoral College get all wonky.
Yeah.
Where, you know, was the case with Gore in which he won the popular vote. But I don't think it's going to be the squeaker that was. But again, Florida, you know. Will Florida be the factor again? It could be. I wouldn't say it's anybody's game, but Trump has to get a bit more in the game rather than just sort of assume. Maybe he's doing his campaign virtual. You know, it's all virtual, right? It's all just.
Right.
I doubt it. I'm just saying that. And there's no way. You need boots on the ground. You physically need people. And if he's at one campaign office, that doesn't bode well for him.
Well, you need people, and you also have to pay people. Because there was another article that
he's really
not
bad for that,
paying people. Yeah.
No.
He is bad for that.
Just do it out of the goodness of your heart. Everything from the construction workers to, yeah. It's and there's the Democrats have an ad with somebody, was he an architect or something, who got really royally screwed by the sounds of it, allegedly. Yeah. But will it hurt him? Probably.
Well, not amongst supporters.
No, not amongst key supporters, but we will find out what percentage that is soon enough.
Yes, we will.
60 days, something like that?
It's two months today. It's exactly 2 months
today.
We need
the 60 minutes clock.
Because it's November 8th is the election day, so it's 2 months today.
There you go, and we will cover it. We won't be doing the live coverage like we do for the Canadian ones, because I almost think, what are they doing?
I almost think we should. I mean, it's...
Well, it might.
People...
We'll take a poll. Get in touch with us if you want us to do live election coverage that night, if we're allowed to. We'll give it a whack. If not, we'll definitely talk about it on the week's show.
Okay. We're going to stick with this week's show. And our next topic is Scarborough, Rouge River, had a by-election last week. Bit of history. First time in that riding's history that they have elected a progressive conservative MPP. His name is Raymond Chow. Raymond Cho. And it was a victory. It was, I think, 28% voter turnout. But, that's all you need, if that's all you need. But this was not without controversy, because there was a letter that went around signed by Patrick Brown saying that he will repeal the sex ed curriculum, the new sex ed curriculum that was introduced last year, in the event of him winning and forming a government in 2018. This was expected to rile up the socially conservative base in that particular area of Scarborough, while at the same time, there's some immediate backtracking, because this is just the kind of thing that would likely lose Patrick Brown if this were to come out in the middle of a full-blown general election.
Yes, definitely. And he was blaming it on some operatives or some workers by the sounds of it. But the guy really, really needs to decide where he wants to be in issues. He is the king so far of the flip-flop.
Mm.
Now, Brown aside, Cho has quite the history in Scarborough, and that he was on city council for what, 25 years?
Yeah, since 91.
Yeah, so he's a known in the area. So it's not as, I'm not sure how strong a blue victory this is, because when somebody is that big a guy in the community, you know, his odds were really good. And he's run before. As far as I understand it, he started off as an NDP. And at one point, he was the... Do you remember that business about the independent liberal? How many elections ago was that? It's not that long ago. He was running. He wanted the liberal nomination, didn't get it, and he ran as the independent liberal.
Yes, yes, yes.
So he's pretty much been through all three parties. He's had lots of, you know, municipal people tend to do that generally, can do that. Cho is 79, not to be ageist, but I'm just saying he's been around for a long time, right? And his dual campaign managers were his wife, who is Soon Okay, which I think is she should run. Soon Okay? Soon Okay. And no, it's the greatest name ever. And her and
it writes itself. Yeah.
And Doug Ford were joint campaign managers. So the Fordism is still alive and well in Toronto. I'm not sure how directly involved Doug Ford was. He didn't really want to comment on anything, kind of stayed behind the scenes. But he was there.
I saw him in that picture of on election night, the victory sort of speech, and he was there on the dais next to Raymond Cho, and I was like, why is Doug Ford there?
Because he's co-campaign manager with Soon Okay. So,
He's run for the NDP in the past. He's run as an independent liberal. Although it just says, like, on his history, he ran as an independent, and I think it was 08 he ran as an independent, and then he ran as a PC in 2014. So yeah, it has been his ambition to try and take it up to the next level, and he has won. And you know, we'll get back to the sex ed letter in a minute, but I mean, just in terms of where this could go for Patrick Brown and the PCs, I think a lot of them are thinking this is going to be a Victoria Halliburton situation in 94, where this was like the launching point to the taking over of the government with a new conservative government. But I have two words for people who think that could be a reality, and that is Doug Halliday. Remember, he won the summer before the 2014 general, when Queen's Park was overturned on a confidence motion. And everyone thought, like, oh, we got a PC in Toronto, major victory for the PCs. And, you know, they're going to be on their way come the next general election, form a government. And then what happened? Liberal sweep. So it's difficult to say, I mean, because of that name recognition value, you know, that we might be seeing a similar sweep here.
Well, yeah, I'm not so sure, but I mean, I think if we see that there's two more by-elections on the way, there's Hudak's seat in Niagara, Glenbrook.
Yes.
Which will probably go blue. So we've had three by-elections. Three of them have gone to the Tories. Two of those seats, however, were already
Tory.
So they're making it out like, blue is gaining. But I think if the Liberals lose in Ottawa-Vanier, which is a solid Liberal seat. I don't think it's ever been anything else since it's existed. Mm-hmm. If the Liberals lose there, then that will be the bellwether or the gauge as to whether we're going to see change in the air for sure. That would be the one. This one, not so much. But I think if they lose Ottawa-Vanier, this is my prediction, then you know the blue is definitely on the rise.
And of course, there's Liberal posturing now because of breaking news today that they are having a throne speech on Monday.
The prorogue, right?
Yeah, they prorogued Parliament, or they prorogued the legislature.
Have a nice long weekend, guys. too, Raymond.
And they're having a throne speech on Monday, so the Liberals are trying to reset the clock. And
when they got rid of Dalton McGuinty, right?
Yes, very true.
Well, we'll see.
Yes, we will see. But the sex ed letter thing. I kind of found it weird. I mean, first of all, because it's been a year since that has gone into effect, and although there was like some saber rattling from people that they were going to take their kids out of school, it's what always happens with these social issues is that some people make a fuss and then everything chills out and it just becomes part of what's going on. But the thing I find really incredibly troubling in all this, first of all, it reminded me that Patrick Brown kind of won the leadership on the backs of social conservatives and hasn't really done anything for them ever since. He's been trying to move to the center on a lot of different issues, even though, you know, he basically, you know, had Monty McNaughton's back about the protests about sex ed, and that was kind of the constituency he appealed to.
And then he went to Pride.
Yeah.
Right. So it sounds like he wants it both ways.
Michael Corn wrote an interesting thing in Now that basically he didn't he he's known Patrick Brown for a number of years, and he's like, he's never known Patrick Brown to have like a conservative stance on it, like social issues. He's never really taken a stand, so it seems a bit out of the norm for him to take that side of things. But what is further, what was weird about the situation is, yeah, he stamped it down immediately, said no, I was like on vacation when this went out, and I had like no idea, even though it has a signature on it. But I mean, signatures can be like, I'm sure they let him sign stuff with a stamp, so who knows. But then it came out in the Toronto Star that his chief of staff emailed someone and said, hey, there's going to be a letter coming out this weekend that I think you're going to be interested in. An activist in the social conservative movement. And so his chief of staff knew it was coming and he didn't?
Yeah, not likely.
Yeah.
So you get, yeah, somebody in the top job like that needs to be on top of these things. So is it a slip up? Maybe, but we shall see as to whether. But like I said, it's from what I can tell with Brown, he really does want it both ways. He would like the, maybe he's trying to be a bit of a unifier and sort of appeasing the social conservatives, because Scarborough is a multi-ethnic riding, and I think there was a lot riding on that. You know, I think it was one of the hotbeds of, we don't want our kids going to school to talk about the sexy. that was almost a direct quote of somebody's like, you're protesting, you don't want your kids to talk about the sexy? I was like, I think you need to go to the class as well. Anyway, it doesn't matter. So we've got the social conservatives on one hand, and then the, let's call them the red Tories, because red Tories have gone or been stomped on, right? So I think he's trying to harness that old, who was it that made these? He's going to be like a Bill Davis. I mean, Bill Davis was like the king of the red Tories, right? So Brown would have to go a long, long way to have, you know, an inch of the credibility that Bill Davis had or has. So, you know, we'll see on that front. So I think we'll need to wait until the next couple of, do you know when these next by-elections are? I'm not sure.
I don't think they've announced them yet.
No, but it's going to be soon enough, right?
Probably. But, I mean, and that's something else to keep in mind, too. This was like the dog days of summer. This was the Thursday before the long weekend.
Yeah.
And, you know,
so the fact we got 25% out is pretty impressive, because it's usually less than that, right?
Yeah,
it's
I mean,
20.
Yeah, he got 9,000 votes, Raymond Cho.
And second and third were pretty close, weren't they? They were neck and neck with each other.
Yeah, Perigal Thiru, who is the Liberal, got 7,257, and Nathan Shan got 6,905. So it's about 350 votes difference. Worth noting, too, that they're both members of the Tamil community, so there's perhaps some vote splitting there.
Sure. Do you know if that official complaint went anywhere about Thiru sort of announcing the election? He sent out an email that the by-election was going to happen, and then minutes later it was announced officially. It was like he jumped the gun, and I think the NDP were complaining that there's no way he should have done that. But maybe it won't go anywhere now that the PCs have taken it. I should also mention, friend of the show, John Trammell ran again.
Yes, of the world, he was running for the Palpers Party this time.
World record holder, and of course, above the none of the, I don't know what the numbers were, but they were, we'd really, really like to get above Zananova on the show. Just because to change your name to be in every election from now to Kingdom Come may put John Trammell to shame in some future date. Because all you can do is run in elections when that's
well,
your name.
You know what? They could beat John Trammell, because John Trammell has a bit of an asterisk, because he ran in the by-election here that was canceled. So he didn't technically lose that one.
Yes.
So he has like, he's lost all these elections except for this one, because it was canceled before it went through. So
Mr. Trammell, I believe you've listed in the past, and Mr. Zananova, give us a call if you want. We'll put you on one of these days. We can talk about your election ambitions and stuff.
Yeah, we're going to talk about more ambitions after the break, more conservative politician ambitions, and that would be fun to say three times fast, but we're not going to, because we're going to play music and a commercial break here on Open Sources Guelph. You are listening to CFRU 93.3 FM, Guelph Campus and Community Radio.
You're listening to CFRU 93.3 FM, 250 watt of community power.
Oh, let her go there. over mama. Never gonna find a good looking man like me. Play Piedmont. $1 million, had a million sheep and goats. I had a million nickels and dimes.
How'd you know that, boy?
What a reason I knew I had a million nickels and dimes.
That was the Vaudevillian from their new album, Bringin' Satan Down. And that song was called He's in the Jailhouse Now. Not that same one from the Oh Brother, We're Out There, but just proving that if you do vote twice, you may end up in the jailhouse now. You can make as many robocalls as you like, but you won't, you know, vote twice, you're going down. So the Vaudevillian, new to the station, and a lovely album. Anything with washboard and kazoos must be played more than once, so... Not necessarily on our show.
I think that's a direct quote from Oliver Rockside.
Yeah, he would hate that, wouldn't he? Rockside, if you're listening, I guess apologies. I was like, I ain't apologizing for nothing. Oh, anyway.
There you go.
we'll play some funky new wave next week.
Speaking of apologizing for nothing, Kelly Leach, who is a conservative MP from Toronto, she's one of five people running so far to replace Stephen Harper as leader of the Conservative Party of Canada, kind of screwed up last week. She, or rather her campaign, but I'm sure she had a hand in it, sent a survey around to Quest to supporters, asking them their priorities on issues. One caught the eye of a lot of people, and it was whether or not there should be a test for anti-Canadian values when new immigrants or refugees are arriving in Canada. This made people understandably upset, especially coming from the artist that brought us the Barbaric Cultural Practices Hotline last election. She has said she regrets her involvement in that, but, you know, here we go again. It's kind of a different song from the same album. Except this time, the party has thrown her under the bus, it seems. Like, everyone from Rona Ambrose to Michael Chong is like, nope, that's not the Conservative Party we want to be.
All of the other candidates. And I think this part of this is to do with the rejection of Harperism, because the Cultural Practices Hotline, which made her cry on PNP, by the way.
Yeah.
She came on and it's a famous bit now, 2 minutes long. You'll see it. She just got very emotional talking about it. But the backtracking on this one has been weird. She's like, well, that's not what I meant. Somebody had compared her to Trump. And that was, I saw that just before airtime, that, you know, this is shades of never mind Harperism, this is Trumpism. She's like, No, it's not. This is along the lines of the extreme vetting. Here's the exact words.
Extreme vetting.
Extreme vetting.
Extreme.
She wants to weed out tolerance towards, or sorry, those that are intolerant towards other religions, cultures, sexual orientations, violent misogynist behavior, or lack of acceptance of our Canadian tradition of personal and economic freedoms. And I was like, that's your way of saying, okay, no lefties, commies,
no commies,
socialists.
No commies allowed.
But we also don't want anybody. We need the extreme vetting of people coming to Canada. Yeah, and
vetting.
Every single one of them. Maxime Bernier says unworkable. Deepak Oberoi was the one that said it's definitely Trumpism.
Yeah.
Who else? Yeah, like you said, Ron Ambrose, Ron Chong called it an ideological purity test. Chong, the son of two immigrants, one Dutch.
Yeah, Dutch and Chinese.
And Chinese. So nobody in the gang likes this. But mind you, this is coming from the woman who's one of her biggest influences, according to her, because I was reading up on her a bit, was Margaret Thatcher when she was growing up. So this should be no surprise, really, if somebody's, you know.
Well, I understand that. I mean,
Thatcher.
Well, no matter what you think of Thatcher's politics, you can't deny that there are probably a lot of women who...
So I'll say properly, Thatcher. But anyway.
And there are a lot of women who look up to her just because she's, you know, the Iron Lady. It's not necessarily a political thing, but...
No, it's pretty political, I think.
But, well...
Anyway, I know what you mean, though.
Yeah.
The values as opposed to the woman herself, because she was the grossest daughter. You see. Whatever.
Well, yeah.
The other thing I saw this week was that she had been campaigning with Raymond Cho. There's a crossover from another story. So she's... put in an appearance, and I guess as they do, backing the candidates. So she's been in a lot of ribbon cuttings and stuff, which is what you need to do when you want the gig.
I'm sure she just wanted the show bump.
You never know. Some advice from Doug Ford, maybe. Because that'll help you. Well, it worked for Raymond Cho, I suppose.
Actually, there is an interesting Ford connection. It's Nick Kovalis.
Oh.
Is her campaign manager, and he was, of course, Rob Ford's campaign manager when he ran for mayor.
I've had crossovers in every story.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
So, Nick Kovalis, what did I write about him? Anyway, yeah, so I understand the point. Yeah, you don't want, like, misogynists and people who are anti-trans, anti-queer. You know, any of that stuff.
They're already here.
Yeah. Like, most of them are already here and are white.
True.
But it's what Bernier said. It's unworkable. It's unworkable. It's like it's Trump's, you know, Trump's test. Like, and immediately everyone said, "Well, how are you going to do that? How are you going to scan for people? You know, to there's a way to cheat every test." Are you going to hook somebody up to a lie detector and go, like, it's going to be like the first scene from Blade Runner. And he's you're walking down the street and you see what looks like a man wearing a dress. What do you do? Do you stop and say hello? Or do you set him on fire?
And that's, get out.
Yeah. Is that how that's going to work?
Trump's
no,
case
of course not. It's completely irrational. It's... Despite her, I don't know if she's actually said she regrets this or not. It seems like a lot of defending it, but it's a dog whistle. That's all this is.
She said she doesn't think it's intolerant to expect immigrants to share a set of values.
Yeah.
But presumably people that want to be Canadian generally, vast majority do want to share in Canadian values, whatever those are. There's a strong multicultural element. Tim Hortons. Is that our Canadian values? Probably, right?
Well, yeah.
You know, but we have hockey broadcasts in Punjabi. Like, you know, that's what it is. It's a big tent, right? So how, you know, do you enforce, because the shades of this, when you hear it, not only does it harken back to the Barbaric Culture Practices Hotline, but it's, are you judging people coming in by their skin color? That's
yes.
What you immediately get from this. It's like, we don't want, you know, those people.
And
it is unworkable. You know, Bernie's right for all of his shortcomings. It's it's unworkable. So it's almost unanimous of the declared candidates, Rhona Ambrose, who can't run. And anybody that they ask about this says, what? And yet she persists. So I think she's sort of zeroing in on a certain part of the electorate as well, which probably won't get her elected. Same as Trump, right?
And there was another question on there where she says, where the questionnaire asks whether terrorists should be incarcerated as opposed to providing them therapy and counseling. And I'm like, in what world are we, you know, sentencing terrorists to therapy and counseling? That seems like one of those made up questions that makes you, if you are a certain mind of things, like, just sending the terrorists to Club Fed, and they're getting 3 square meals a day and playing Parcheesi in the rec room, and they're watching America's Next Top Model. It's ridiculous.
And eating cupcakes. Yeah, I think she's kind of hinting at that whole, how do we not deprogram, but how do you prevent radicalism from happening, which is a separate world from immigration.
Right.
Right, because the radicalized people that we've seen in Canada so far that acted out on that were born here.
Born and raised.
Or they spent their formative years here. So you can't say that it's... The implication is somebody is getting off the boat and getting the gun right away.
Right.
And they want to take us out and fear-mongering the usual... It is, to me, my opinion, it is complete Trumpism. She doesn't see it that way because it's sort of a Canadian version Because the way she couches it in this kind of kinder, gentler tone that she has, and I'm so desperately dying to impersonate her, but I won't do it because she has a very unique voice. But, well, I mean, we do Trump all the time, but it doesn't matter how she sounds. It's what she's saying is what's important, right?
Crooked Justin Trudeau.
Yes, we can just make all the fun of the Trump we want. But it's, but that's it, though. It may not, she may not sound like Trump, but that's, to me, that's what's coming out of her mouth. And that's, and everybody reacted the same way, and that's... You know, she should be red flagging that and doing a Patrick Brown and doing a 180 and running in the other direction and saying, because she's very apologetic about the hotline.
That's the thing.
I should never have, we should, you know, if I could do that over again. But anyway, she was being a spokesperson for Harper & Co., right?
That's so the thing that makes me tear my hair out about this is like she flagged herself on Power and Politics about this.
Yeah.
And you don't like to accuse someone of crocodile tears. And I believe she was genuine. Like, she was trying to help out the party. This may not have been a policy that she had come up with, but I mean, sometimes you got to be a team player. I get that. But now it seems like crocodile tears because this is from the exact same school of thought. If you were that against the barbaric cultural practices line again in the first place, you don't immediately come back and go, should we test for anti-Canadian values?
Could you not take a stand and say, no, sorry, I'm not doing that? Maybe,
yeah.
Maybe she felt, you know, as I've said before, like Stockholm syndrome, because other conservatives, I don't think you'd ever see somebody like Lisa Raitt or Michelle Rempel or Peter McKay. So they took the underlings and said, okay, kids, you know, can you present this, please? Or we're going to have your necks or you'll never make cabinet or who knows
Well, on
why,
top of
right?
it all, they've all run screaming from that stuff ever since.
And just as a side note, what happened to Chris Alexander? He's just sort of like completely gone, right?
That's a good question.
Well, we will find out and get back to you on that because this is my burning question. Where did he go? We don't know. Corporate world, somewhere.
Well, and of course it's worth noting. Well, there's a couple of things worth noting. One is that Stephen Harper finally pulled the escape hatch on his seat in Calgary Heritage. He, of course, quietly left the building and then posted a video on YouTube that said he was leaving.
Later, cats.
And we're still waiting to see if anyone else jumps into the race because it's less than a year now. It's in... like 9 months, the leadership convention. And we're waiting for McKay. We're waiting to see about Lisa Raitt. We're waiting to see about Kevin O'Leary. That third one, maybe not so much.
Chris Alexander. Where is he?
But yeah, so we're waiting to see if anyone's going to, anyone of significant name value, not that Kelly Leach or Maxime Bernier or Michael Chong are significant name value, but like sort of the
people I mentioned before.
Yeah, the front.
Rempel says she's not interested in.
Yeah, the front bench of
McKay
the
McKay will be
party.
Back. I'd put $100 on that.
Yeah, but will he be back in 2017 or what's he going to do? I don't know. That's a big question that we will not answer today.
He won't be spending more time with the family.
Because we have to talk about Canada's dad, Peter Mansbridge.
Uncle Pete. Petey Millions.
He's leaving the house and he's going on special assignment. After Canada Day!
It was a couple weeks ago. I'm like, geez, I wonder if Mansbridge is ever going to call it a day. And then this happens. I was like, what?
Scotty needs to use his powers for good instead of evil.
Oh, my goodness. But yeah, he's definitely dragging it out, though. I mean, I don't know if he's hoping that the symbolism of stepping down on Canada Day next year.
Oh, come
like,
on.
Everybody's going to remember that. That was the day, the 150th birthday of Canada, that Peter Mansbridge stepped down. But he didn't. He didn't say he's leaving completely. He isn't packing or anything. He will be around. He'll be doing that Mansbridge one-on-one, which generally, in my view, is a big snooze. And no, it is. It is, though. And this is all they did yesterday. It was the interview with Hunter Tutu. It's supposed to be this big, insightful thing. And all they did on PNP, and this is the problem overall with the CBC, of which Mansbridge is a part of and a symptom, is that everything else becomes an ad for other things that are on the mothership. So the news becomes about the Olympics. PNP comes about, and it's a political story for sure, and it's an exclusive. Mansbridge talking to Hunter Tutu, I took a pass. Like, it was like, just not interested. But this is the thing. We'll never, I think it was Chantal Hebert, somebody, saying that we'll never see the like of this again. I mean, not just the fact that you put so much trust into the main newsreader. He's been around for 30 years. I pretty much started watching the news when Mansbridge took over from Knowlton Nash. I was pretty dedicated to it, obviously, because I'm doing this. You know, it had some kind of effect, not necessarily Mansbridge. But this is that whole investment in just having the one newsreader, like it's the internet chucked it right out the window, right? For sure. But beyond that, with Mansbridge, you know, he had a nice voice. Somebody, what's the story? The apocryphal story of somebody heard him making an announcement at the airport in Churchill,
yes,
or something.
That's right.
And it's like Churchill, I need that guy. Didn't finish high school. Doesn't have a journalism degree.
Yeah,
we'll never see the like again of somebody in that position
who
has so
absolutely
little background. I mean, he obviously became a reporter and did it probably street cred the old-fashioned way.
Oh yeah,
but you can't just get hired on a nice voice now, and this is why we'll never see it. And also the diversity of media too, in terms of how it's coming at you.
And yeah, it's
the grandmas will be upset, but you know, other than that,
well, that's about all who watches the National front
and,
to back.
Oh, and me.
Well, I
may be the youngest viewer.
I do as well, but it's
like
mostly when I
watch
like
it with the PVR.
It's, yeah, you know. it's mostly like when I. If I'm working late and I come home and that's kind of like the one thing on at 10 o'clock that I don't
tonight on the
find.
National.
That's two. If there's any good movie on AMC, I want to watch the end of. No.
See, there you go. It's all changed.
But I do agree with you about the whole, the national news anchor thing. To a point, there are times when that is still a comfort, though, and I'm thinking particularly the Parliament Hill shooting. Mm-hmm. In 2014, there was something as compared to a lot of the people you see on CNN who are just hyperbolic, mm-hmm. who are just like pure, just like personality and have no grounding to them. To see Peter Mansbridge in that situation calmly and clearly explain the situation and not drag it out and not, you know, tease with all these, like, we're getting breaking news.
Yeah.
Like you see on CNN, that is...
It's like somebody opened an envelope, yeah.
That is when I appreciated his skill. What I don't appreciate, and, you know, we had the ad for Canada Land there, and Jesse Brown made this post. Something we've been joking about is that, like, he's a million-dollar man. Mm-hmm. He, his base salary is $800K in a time when CBC, to quote one source, CNN, which is selling the furniture to save the house, mm-hmm. paying one guy $800K a year, doesn't work Fridays anymore. He doesn't do the summer. He has a summer vacation, teacher summer vacation.
And if there's something big ticket, he gets good, like the Olympics, he's there.
Oh, yeah.
Or the Queen turns 140, he goes. Sorry, Queen.
I think we got a couple of those stories mixed up, but
no, Queen and the Queen. Yes, yeah. I don't know, but and this is the thing: you see that, and you say, "My goodness, this is the public broadcaster. We're all paying for this." That could put a lot of boots on the ground
because
in the summer, somebody like me watches the National, and they mix it up, and they get to the point where they get people that are just. Not to diminish people that are core, like what's her name, Lindsay Duncombe, who's now the Washington correspondent, came in and read.
Yeah.
And it almost seemed to me that they were testing who was going to get into the chair. And you sort of hinted at it. My predictions would be either Wendy Mesley, Pete's ex-wife.
Second.
Who is probably the default reader next to Mansbridge. When he's not there, it's Wendy. Wendy's not available, they get somebody else. Or... Hannah Mansing from the West Coast, who is on every day, almost every day. It's a very, to me, and I prefer that broadcast because it's a bit, let's just say it's a bit more modern, you know, in terms of, it's probably the it's shades of City TV in terms of the walk around the studio, and then he consults with other people in the studio, and then they go and talk to whatever. And on the weekend, he spoke to Duran Duran. Like, it's a complete... And it's all happening at once, seamless. Whereas the National is that very formal, staid, old-fashioned, hearkening back to the Cronkite. I always go, the default's always Walter Cronkite, right?
Uncle Walter.
Where you've got the reader. But you're right about the coverage. Did I mention 9/11? Like, Mansbridge on 9/11? Yeah. Like,
He
pulled out the stops.
Yeah.
Right now, do you earn your $1.1 million and your clothing allowance and you're getting to go to everything and claiming every friggin' sandwich that you get in the limo? Probably not. because those days are over. Specifically, and this is where I wouldn't say I lean to the right, but when people point to the CBC and say, there's $1 billion there and look what we're getting. You know, that to me
1% goes to Mansbridge.
Yeah, well,
yeah, when you look at it that way.
And it's the fact that they won't release what people make. You know, in this province, $100,000 or more, you're on the public payroll. People know how much you make. CBC, for some reason, whatever reason, doesn't have to do that, right?
Hmm.
But, you know, what is the face that we're going to see? Because, you know, CBC obviously has some problems. You know, we don't want to see the youngerish, hip Gomeshi face, right? You know, there's probably a bad example. No, but he probably was very high paid for what he did as well.
Oh, he was.
I would say so, you know.
Of course, I've seen people throw around Strombo as a replacement.
So. Oh, good Lord. You might as well just pack up the news if you're going to do that.
I'm not sure how serious some of those proposals were, but I kept seeing his name pop up.
But there is a lot of talent there at CBC, and they have to... I just hope they don't pull one of these. Well, we're going to get some... the name that popped to mind was Newman, Peter Newman. Not Peter...
You mean Kevin Newman?
Peter Newman? I'm mixing up my Newmans. Hello, Newman. Yeah, Kevin Newman, who's was gunning for the top job for so long at CTV. By the way, the most watched broadcast of that type in the nation is CTV News. It's not CBC.
That's true, too.
CTV is the most watched.
Yeah.
And then we had Lloyd Robertson, who has also stuck around a bit. He's on W5, I guess. Still got a foot in the game, but I think Mansbridge's foot in the game is going to be a much bigger foot in terms of he's still around. And again, they'll dust him off when it's stuff like the Olympics and that, so he gets to go on the junket. So, and I personally don't think I've been tired of the guy for years, to be honest, and not in a sort of angry I hate the guy way. It's kind of like when you see somebody else doing the reading it, it's like, yeah, this is great, this is refreshing. Just do that.
Yeah, right. I would say Hannah Mansing is probably the front runner.
Is it?
Because,
so yeah, we're on the same page there.
Wendy Mesley, she doesn't look it, but she's 59 years old. And so I think it was John Doyle maybe who in The Globe who said like it's basically kind of like a Pope Benedict situation where you hire someone to keep the chair warm until you can find someone younger.
Well.
But I mean, having said that, I have nothing against her and I think she'd do a great job. Strombo is my first one. I'm just kidding.
stop.
But, you, but you're right about they do need to modernize a bit. I hope it's not too much modernization because I do think there's something when you watch the other news channels, even Canadian news channels. I don't know what the problem with Canada AM, or that CTV thought the problem with Canada AM was, because I thought it was probably the best morning show. Of the morning shows.
They've dumbed that sucker down, haven't they? I haven't watched it, but
they canceled it and replaced it. I don't know what the problem with...
It's Mulroney and poached Anne-Marie Medway.
Exactly. Right? I said, I think it was on Twitter, I said, I don't know what the problem with Canada AM was, but I don't think the solution was more Ben Mulroney. And...
No. Not, but, well, because Canada AM used to be a journalist. It was like Norm Perry for all those years. It was more... It was broad, but it was more journalistic, let's say. It was your morning news.
Right, it was news.
But now people don't give a toss about that anymore. It's just all about like, oh, what was so-and-so wearing? Well, how big is Kim Kardashian's butt?
Well,
isn't
they weren't
where
even,
it's going, right?
Well, like, they weren't even doing that. I mean, that's why they brought Ben Mulroney on.
Did you watch
on.
Any of it? What happened? Like
Canada AM?
Yeah, no, the new one.
I don't watch Ben Mulroney.
No, but did you watch it just for a tease? I mean, if I get a if I get a sickie, I'm going to watch it.
There's five people on that channel. Two, I think, are two of the most annoying people in Canada media. One is Ben Mulroney, and the other is Melissa Grillo, who is also on the View, the Social, and she's they're easily two of the most annoying people in Canadian media. Marissa Grillo, of course, is from CP24, which is now the farm team for annoying people in Canadian media. I'm sorry. There is like maybe. Speaking of people retiring, Ann Rohmer, who's retired twice now,
she
back on CP24 doing anchoring.
Veteran stuff. Yeah, and there was, CBC has a new show now with it. Sorry, I always mix it up. Who passed away? Stephen and Chris. The other one. And it looks like it's going to be along the lines of The View or whatever. But I don't think it's going to be, it's not a new show. You know, it's definitely not, and you know, the way it's being presented, it's not news. It's lifestyle and all of that. And I don't know. I suppose if you're like Adam and I think we're the same in this respect, it's like there should be a line. There should be a wall. We're going to build a wall between the news. We're going to build a wall between the news and the fluffy, puffy stuff. You know, you sort of accept the puppy story at the end. Well, it used to be the puppy story, but now it's they just pull stuff from
We're going to build a wall between the media. It's going to be the greatest wall you've ever seen. I guarantee it. And that's it for this week's edition of Open Sources. I'm going to stop the Trump impression there. You can stay connected to us all week at opensourcesguelph.com. You can go to Facebook on Open Sources Newswire, on Twitter at OS_Guelph. And of course, Podbean is where you can find the Guelph Politicast channel and previous episodes of Open Sources Guelph, which you can also procure through iTunes. You can connect with me personally at Adam A. Donaldson or go to guelphpolitico.blogspot.ca.
If you can't bloody well find us after that list, there's a problem. Scotty Hertz on Twitter, Scotty Hertz on Facebook. And I blog at the Spanner Book, spannerbook.wordpress.com. Just Google it like everybody else does. That's how we get our news. Just Google it.
Yes. And
I'm not Peter Mansbridge, and that is Open Sources.
I'm just going to say we are working on having some special guests come in soon. So stay tuned for all the updates for that. In the meantime, we will have another program here for you at the top of the hour on CFRU 93.3 FM, Guelph Campus and Community Radio. CFRU.ca is where you can find it online. And you can find us back here next week at 5 p.m. on Open Sources Guelph. We will see you then.